Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Of the six bills in Speaker Nancy Pelosi's first 100 hours agenda, perhaps none seems so much like mom and apple pie as the one called the 9/11 Commission Bill. The goal, as we heard during the election campaign, is to pass all the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission that the old Republican Congress did not pass to keep the country safe from terrorism. And the Democrats intend to pass all six of their first 100 hours bills with no debate because they say these measures were thoroughly debated by the old Congress and then rejected by the GOP majority. But it's turning out not to be that simple. The 9/11 Commission bill is actually a 278-page piece of legislation just introduced on Friday. It does not include all the remaining recommendations of the commission as advertised and includes some provisions that some Homeland Security experts, including some Democrats, are not so sure about, like banning all ship containers from entering the United States unless they've been screened for radiation, and cutting off U.S. aid to Pakistan unless Pakistan cracks down more on the Taliban in certain parts of that country. So let's talk about the 9/11 Commission bill with a member of the 9/11 Commission, Richard Benveniste, one of the Democratic members of the bipartisan commission. He's a partner in the law firm of Mayer, Brown, Rowe, and Maugh. And Mr. Benveniste, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
First, the big picture, as you see it, how much are the House Democrats on the right track here?
I think substantially they are. There's been some progress made, a lot of progress in some areas. Other areas have not been so successfully pursued. I think one of the things to have in mind is that enacting legislation is the first part of addressing the problems, but implementing these recommendations is another story. I guess it's the difference between talking the talk and walking the walk.
Give me an example of that.
Well, for example, we have made a recommendation that the allocation of Homeland Security funds be based on risk and risk alone rather than on other political considerations. I think Secretary Chertoff has recently revised the guidelines for doing these risk analyses that we've suggested. More needs to be done in order to make sure that the communities that are at greatest risk for terrorist attacks are the ones which get the most.
And obviously this has been a big issue for New York. New York wants it to be very much that way because of the way we perceive our own risk having been attacked. And is this in the Democrats' bill?
Yes, it is. There are a number of other proposals in the Democrats' bill, which I think we have unanimous agreement from the former members of the commission, that make a lot of sense. For example, with respect to first responders, there's a new interoperability grant program that specifically addresses communications among emergency responders, where radios, as you well know, on 9/11 did not function as between the fire department and the police in New York City. That was a huge problem. We have begun to address that problem in this country, but not entirely so, and particularly with respect to providing a designated radio spectrum.
Right. Now, I believe that this is a controversy that Mayor Bloomberg feels like maybe you're on the wrong side of. The mayor will be testifying, I believe, on the Senate version of this bill today because Congress may force New York City to start over on its program to make fire and police radios interoperable, forcing the city off one band of radio frequency that it started on onto another, costing the city time and money, the mayor says, and effectiveness. Does that come from the 9/11 Commission report?
I don't think so. I think the 9/11 Commission report suggests that radio frequency be allocated, particularly to areas in which this problem has not been addressed, so that communications capability will go through concrete and steel in high-rise buildings. To the extent that this has been addressed already, I don't think anybody is suggesting that it has to be redone.
So you're saying if Mayor Bloomberg has started down the 400 megahertz or whatever it is spectrum, and the bill calls for the 700 megahertz, I may have my numbers wrong, then as far as you're concerned, and you think as far as Congress is concerned, that's going to be okay?
I think that this is a detail that does not really reflect what we have suggested. Congress has deferred until 2009 the allocation of radio spectrum to first responders. Our position is that's too long to wait.
Richard Benveniste, Democratic member of the 9/11 Commission, my guest on WNYC as we talk about the new Democratic Congress's 9/11 Commission bill, which could be voted on today. And let me go down the list of some of the other specific questions or controversies surrounding this bill that have come up and see what you think about them. On the screening of ship containers, the bill says within 5 years, all ship containers headed for the United States must have been screened in their ports of origin for components of a nuclear bomb. Did the 9/11 Commission call for that?
Yes. It makes sense that we pre-screen materials that come on container ships. And we have the technology in development to do this, and there isn't any reason why, given the horrendous consequences of a nuclear detonation in the United States, that we not utilize that technology appropriately.
Now, some skeptics, like Senator Lieberman, say for all that cost, an estimated $3 billion plus over the next decade, there would still be ways to shield nuclear bomb components from the current technology on the detectors. And besides, anyone really determined to smuggle in nuclear weapons could do it on private ships and boats that wouldn't be screened as cargo ships would. And besides which, it'll be so expensive that it'll impede trade and literally cause some ports to shut down. Do you disagree with any of that?
I don't think it's going to cause ports to shut down. I think there's always a cat and mouse game between the development of technology and the kinds of techniques that our adversaries will use. That doesn't mean that we ought to simply throw up our hands and say we can't do anything. I don't think that's appropriate.
So you think the deadlines might actually drive the technology, as sometimes happens with environmental law, for example?
I think that's entirely correct, Brian.
Another provision of this bill would target U.S. foreign policy, as I understand it, cutting off U.S. aid to Pakistan, as I said before, unless Pakistan cracks down more on the Taliban in certain parts of the country. Was that in the 9/11 Commission report?
Not specifically, but we do need to use a carrot and a stick in terms of our foreign policy. For example, we talk about providing both benefits and penalties for those who do not comply with reasonable measures to prevent dissemination of nuclear materials in an unauthorized way. We call for improvement of public diplomacy and enhancement of international aid and education programs in Muslim populated countries, so that we are suggesting, and I think Congress gets it, at least this Congress does, that there's more to do in terms of winning the ideological battle than simply putting boots on the ground.
The bill, from what I've read, also does not include some 9/11 Commission recommendations that the Commission considered very important, like your number one request of Congress to streamline the number of committees that have oversight jurisdiction over Homeland Security. Why was that important to you, and how do you see this bill in that light?
Well, there are two aspects to what we suggested with Congress, and Brian, quite clearly we recognized in our final report that perhaps the recommendation with respect to Congress making changes and reorganizing itself in a better way would be among the most difficult, if not the most difficult, of our recommendations. Nevertheless, we thought it was quite appropriate to talk about it. Certainly, if we were writing on a clean slate, we would never have suggested the kinds of oversight by literally scores of different committees and subcommittees of Congress that now exist. So we suggested to make our oversight far more robust than it was, and certainly Congress in the past 6 years has been remiss, to say the least, in exercising its constitutional oversight responsibilities. We think that streamlining, making fewer committees responsible, but in a more robust way for oversight responsibilities over the administration's intelligence
Right,
actions.
But apparently there's not going to be that much streamlining.
Well, there's the first step. At least Speaker Pelosi has suggested the creation of a hybrid committee with respect to appropriators and authorizers. The appropriations, we found, is the area in which the intelligence community pays attention. They're the ones who write the checks. And those who have oversight responsibility don't have the ability to write those checks. So we suggested a fusion between the appropriators and the authorizers, those who have oversight responsibility on the permanent committees on intelligence, along with the the appropriations committee. So there's a fusion committee. Mm-hmm. That's the first step. It isn't what we recommended, but it's going in the right direction.
We're almost out of time with Richard Benveniste from the 9/11 Commission on the Democrats' 9/11 Commission bill. Do you have any?
Let me mention one thing since we're almost out of time, Brian, and that is the Civil Liberties and Privacy Oversight Board. There's a substantial recommendation here that strengthens that board, removing it from the executive office of the president, requiring its members to be confirmed by the Senate, and giving it subpoena power, as well as ensuring that the individuals are selected on a bipartisan basis. That's not the case now. And with the enhanced authorities that the executive is using that impinge upon civil liberties and privacy, there needs to be a robust agency or board in which the American public can have confidence that will be looking at the balance between privacy and civil liberties and fighting terrorists.
Do you have any thought about the way the House Democrats are going about this? They are prohibiting floor debate on the premise that these first 100 hours bills were all debated, then rejected by the old Republican Congress. But this bill, as I think is evident from our conversation, has so many new and complicated pieces of material. Are they rushing this too much because it makes a good bumper sticker?
You know, I'm not going to get into the question of the inner workings of Congress so much as to say that these recommendations were made in 2004, and they were discussed extensively at the time, and there has been some movement, perhaps 50% roughly, enacting and implementing our recommendations. This will take it substantially beyond that, and I think that's a good thing.
Richard Benveniste, former Democratic member of the 9/11 Commission, a partner at Mayer, Brown, Rowe, and Maul. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And coming up in a minute, did Toys R Us do the right thing, awarding a First Baby of 2007 prize to a child of an illegal immigrant? Stay with us. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.